Hi, Not a Novel podcast fans. This is Grant, continuing with our summer series on fan fiction. I have Alan with me today. Say hi, Alan.
Hi.
So Alan and I are going to talk about a very important topic as it relates to fan fiction, and that's copyright. So a lot of people that I've talked to and students that I have are often confused on copyright and what is acceptable and not acceptable. So, you know, we'll start off this conversation, Alan, with, you know, what are your thoughts about copyright? Is it, you know, is it overall a benefit for society? You know, are there any flaws to it? Are there any things that we need to kind of look at differently than we do right now? I know that was a lot, but
that's okay. I just wrote them down. But I think overall there is a benefit to copyright usage and copyright law. But I think now in the 21st century, we're seeing more. We're seeing it abused more by large corporations and companies who are limiting fan fiction and other creative uses by striking down videos and on YouTube and taking fan fiction down from websites. As we've kind of seen with Star Wars, I know they were pretty, I guess, they weren't big fans of fan fiction for a long time, and that's only recently changed. And I've seen a lot of court cases, such as Nichols versus Universal, relating to... Wait, that's not a court case. Sorry about that. Challenger versus Colting with Catcher in the Rye. There was a fan fiction novel that was produced... that was supposed to be a sequel to Catcher in the Rye. And when that got published, there was a big court case of saying whether or not this was original works that was just extending the story rather than, and it was something that was new creatively rather than just completely copying Catcher in the Rye. And so I think copyright becomes an issue when you're starting to strike down creativity. And because you can, everyone, I think there's a limited amount of knowledge, well, not limited amount of knowledge, but there's only so many ways you can tell a story or create certain characters. And I think it's okay to sometimes reuse those characters. And so that's just kind of like my issue with copyright.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so kind of going back to what do you think? Specifically the benefit of having copyright is, because you said it was good, but what do you think?
I think it's good in the sense that if I've created something and I've put a set date down or now it gets muddied, because if someone else came up with an idea and we both came up with ideas separately, it's just that they published it first.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, and that's what oftentimes gets confused is, trademarking and patents are different than copyright. Because, you know, copyright is all about the expression, right, of the idea. And trademarking and patent is all about the idea. Right? Not necessarily the expression. Well, sometimes they can cover both idea and expression.
Okay. So just to kind of, I guess, confirm what I'm thinking of copyright. So copyright still, it still coincides with, you know, if someone produces a movie like Star Wars and they can shoot down fan fiction, that's copyright. If someone else trying to
make it
works. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it, and the, you know, the way that you can strike someone down with copyright on Star Wars, you know, I have no idea if George Lucas in the sale of Lucasfilm gave Disney the rights. I assume he did. So, you know, like Disney would become the copyright holder. And so, yeah, it protects Disney against people, you know, first it protects them against people just streaming the whole movie online or on YouTube. So, you know, the first protection is just to make sure that, you know, someone doesn't profit or someone doesn't reduce your profits because they're giving it away for free. The one that you're talking about, you know, with the Salinger case is more of what we would call derivative works. So it's works that are, you know, so similar to the source work that, you know, it's kind of protected. And a lot of times it's protected. Derivative works are a little fuzzy because, you know, what's protected can be pretty specific, or it can be pretty general. It can be, you know, a character name or a setting or a combination of the both. I believe, you know, the issue in the Salinger case is, I think, when you're trying to market your piece as a sequel, right, you're framing it in a way that links it to the source work. It's, you know, it's something else to say, I create this story, and hey, it might be thought of as a sequel to Catcher in the Rye, but that's not what I'm, you know, that's not what I'm doing. So it's one thing to do that. But I think in the case that you're talking about, you know, a lot of times authors don't get come after people for this sort of thing, you know, because this is why there's still a robust fan fiction community. It's when you try and sell something, marketing it as a reboot or a sequel, that's, you know, that's kind of when you get in trouble. You know, that's, I mean, that's one of the benefits. You know, we want creativity to flourish. And, you know, since we're in a capitalist society, we need to pay people for the art that they make. And so we have to figure out ways in which, you know, to pay and protect those people that are creative. But I think, yeah, to your point, it's gotten too corporate. You know, it's one thing to say, like, George Lucas came up with Star Wars and he owns that copyright, and, you know, like, he's allowed to do whatever he wants with it. You know, he can go back to those prequels and just destroy the franchise if he wants to. You know, like, he can do whatever he wants. Now, the issue is when he sells it to someone like Disney, or Disney licenses the story to someone else to do. That's where it gets a little dicey, you know, because then there's a transfer between Star Wars as being like a piece of intellectual property to where Star Wars is trademarked, you know?
And it's more, it's an industry.
Yeah, there's an industry, and then the idea and the form all are, you know, they're owned, and those become, you know, it becomes harder to reuse that sort of thing.
That's why I kind of get confused. That's what I kind of get confused about with copyright, is because I know there seems to be a lot of Star Wars kind of like published works in libraries that don't seem to come from Disney, and these other works, and I don't know whether or not those would be considered fan fiction or not. And if Disney just
lied. I mean, I think you're probably thinking of, like, all of the, you know, the time in between Return of the Jedi and Phantom Menace. I'm trying to remember. That was, you know, it was probably a good 15 or 20 years. And so, you know, people were really hungry for more content. So, you know, back when George Lucas owned the franchise, he authorized a bunch of stories for people to expand the universe.
Mm.
So you have all of these novels. And, you know, the one thing that Disney did that was smart was when they obtained Star Wars, they appeased the fans by saying all of those novels are canon. Those are a part of the universe. Like, we're going to consider both the novels, whatever, the series Rebels, all of that canon. But what we're going to do is stop this kind of fan fiction expanded universe, you know, publishing industry. Because now what they're doing is, you know, you have a novelization of the movie, and then oftentimes you have like a prequel novel. So it's, you know, it's all about making money. It's all about hyping the story that's being sold rather than really thinking about how the universe could be interesting and expanded, right?
Mm-hmm. In a new creative way. Yeah, that's what you're saying, is corporations just buy these, they buy the rights in order to sell these stories, and then they shut off fan fiction.
Yeah. I mean, that's what that's what's so interesting about their strategy is, you know, typically a kind of shutdown like that gets the fanfic community up in arms.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the fact that they made all those stories canon, and then they get to decide what's canon from now on. You know, this is why you see so many like Kylo Ren fan fictions, because they don't care anymore about those fan fictions because they're not legitimized, because there's no outer publishing industry of Star Wars expanded universe stories.
Mm-hmm.
So it's automatically illegitimate. They're not worried about it, you know.
Because it'll
there's a there with, yeah, and sometimes, you know, what you got to be smart about is if you bring something to a court case before it's litigated, sometimes you can diminish your brand and elevate the thing that you're trying to shut down, right? Like, I think Disney did this in a really smart way. There was a movie, maybe 2014, that was guerrilla shot in Disney World. And I thought they were going to shut down that movie because, mm-hmm. you know, cameras aren't allowed there. It's definitely using everything in the park. I think the movie was called Escape from Tomorrow. And I was certain that Disney was going to shut this thing down, right?
Yeah.
And they didn't. You know, it still exists. I think you can still download it on iTunes. But, you know, it was really weird. And not a lot of people watched it. And so, you know, they didn't do anything about it because it would have brought more attention to it than anything, you know, because it was an amateur director. So he would have gotten some, you know, big publicity and probably would have gotten some contract. But now, you know, they just ignore it. It exists. It definitely violates their trademarking, but it's allowed to exist because shining a light on it
would make it just
give it more attention. Yeah, it would give it more attention. So it's kind of the same way as fan fiction. Fan fiction, for a lot of companies, you know, they don't want to legitimize it. So like going after someone would legitimize it. And so that's why, like, it's not about freedom of expression. It's just about time and money, mm-hmm. right?
And what I think I found one example of Paramount Pictures signing a fan fiction to be filmed and allowing it, which I assume they probably took the rights to it and they would earn most of the money, but it was Star mm-hmm. Trek The New Voyages. Mm-hmm. And that was, from what I'm seeing, is that that was previously a fan fiction anthology. Yeah. And they're going to produce a movie, and I believe that Paramount Pictures was just probably saying, you know, we'll accept that into our realm because this is like such a good story and this would benefit us too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Star Trek has this kind of, you know, like it's been redone so many times, right? There's mm-hmm. been Deep Space Nine, there's been Voyager, there's been movies. Some of the movies were directed by people that acted in the series. Like, I think there's a lot more inconsistency and, you know, fluidity in the text, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yes, Paramount is the one that owns it, you know, but it's not like it has a branding like Lucasfilm, right? Does. Like, we know when we see Lucasfilm, it means Star Wars pretty much. And you know, there's no real branding for Star Trek. And I mean, this is why, you know, there's the J.J. Abrams version. There's all those originals. There's like the Next Generation movies. I mean, there's so much fluidity to the text and the retelling. Like, that makes sense to me. Like, it's a more acceptable fan fiction because the water's already kind of muddied, you know, by like who gets to tell the Star Trek stories. Does that make sense?
That does.
Where it's like J.K. in Harry Potter writes these new ones, writes the play. She's trying to be like, I am the authority on this, you know, like Harry Potter and J.K. are tied together. And it's really hard to separate the two, you know, and she's done that through social media and a bunch of other things. But, you know, it's interesting to see things that are like a little looser. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I think, you know, another example is 50 Shades of Grey, right? As a fan fiction that kind of becomes something else completely. Are you aware of this?
The name, the setting, probably.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And this is like where, you know, like fan fiction can be training wheels for writing. Like, you know, you get inspired, you write a story. So why can't you just change the characters in the setting, you know? And the issue is sometimes, and this is where derivative works come in, is if the story cannot stand on its own, right? If I can understand this story, just what's given to me on the page or the screen, and I don't have to know the source text or any other text, then that becomes a little easier to argue that it's its own unique thing. You know, we talked about in class Rocky IV, even though Rocky IV was written by someone else, all it did was tie up loose plot ends and reuse characters. And so it requires the first three Rockies in order to be understood. And so that's where that case ultimately got lost, is it's derivative work because it requires one to know the first three movies in order to fully comprehend what happens in that fourth one.
And that's where the complexity of copyright law comes into play, is that the original work has to be more complex than what it's coming from, almost.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting because it's interpretive. It's subjective in many ways.
And there's no set guidelines. It always seems to be changing of which way a copyright is being used. There's no set platform to follow for each case almost.
Yeah, I mean, that's what makes it incredibly difficult to understand is, you know, sometimes it depends on who, you know, who's got money, who's defending. how good the claim is, you know, all those things can kind of intersect to make the judgment. You know, there's some times where the judgments are punted. You know, they get it off on a technicality, mm-hmm. right? Like the last Supreme Court session where they were ruling about the Colorado baker that refused to bake the cake for the couple of guys. And, you know, they threw it out on a technicality rather than saying, like, is a cake an artistic expression? And if a cake is an artistic expression, like, can it be discriminatory? Can it have, you know, certain properties? Mm-hmm. So instead of like actually going for the more interesting philosophical discussion, it gets punted because it's like, you know, whatever. In that case, I think it was the Colorado ACLU was obviously, you know, religiously exclusionary, I think it's in something, you know, they obviously wanted to go out after religious beliefs, and that's not fair case. Mm-hmm. And so that's where it's tough is, you know, it seems like a lot of court cases nowadays are being punted on technicalities rather than trying to really say like, well, what is intellectual property and what is fair, you know? Like when someone dies, I mean, I don't understand why it has to be so long after they die.
To be able to use the same ideas that they had.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like I could see that, you know, sometimes people leave a lot of debt and affairs need to be taken care of and that takes many years to do. But, you know, along the same point, it's like, well, we don't want their ancestors to be like profiting off something that's not really theirs, right? Mm-hmm. But it's the same way we think of, you know, money when someone inherits a bunch of money. You know, we think that should be protected and that shouldn't be taxed that much. So, you know, these all kind of tie in together. About these kind of weirdness between economics and creativity.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I think one interesting thing is how copyright is used in the US and not so much elsewhere, it seems. It seems like it's less, they don't worry about it as much in other countries such as the UK, and they just kind of let it slide. I think they don't deal with it as much as we do in the US of corporations or authors trying to strike down other works.
Yeah. I mean, I think the fair use scenario is much more widespread and used, you know, we generally in universities in the UK, like I did my master's there, and we never talked about copyrighted images. You know, a lot more strict on citation and making sure you know, if I'm using an image from the internet, I know where it originated,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily where I found it. But, you know, like that's more about giving credit. Where in the US we're more concerned with profit, you know, it's always tied up with profit.
Mm-hmm.
And in the UK, it's like, well, you want to acknowledge whose thing this was. And I mean, a lot of, you know, there's Creative Commons licensing, that's a lot more common in the UK. You know, that's where you can reuse with attribution, or you can modify something as long as you attribute it. There's something weird in the US about the way that we think of intellectual property, and it's always kind of been at odds with the rest of the world.
And to kind of play devil's advocate with the copyright in a sense of it being used so much in the US, it's almost, you'd think it would benefit creativity because you have to be different in order to avoid any court cases saying that you were in violation of copyright.
Yeah. But I mean, I think there's another argument to be made of, like, I think you said earlier, like, everything is very, you know, like, if you abstract enough, all stories are pretty similar to one another. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when it becomes unclear about how much you can borrow and reuse, people become really, you know, uneasy. Mm-hmm. You know, where, like, even though I might not have used someone else's story, wow, it seems so similar to this other thing. Maybe I shouldn't publish it. Where it's like, you know, you should be confident. Like, you didn't copy something else. You came up with it yourself. You know, it should be free to kind of use. But a lot of the times, I think in the US, we get these lawsuits that are settled out of court because they're usually just not applicable, of someone trying to intimidate someone else by legal proceeding. And that sometimes, you know, that oftentimes actually stymies creativity, you know, because I'm nervous about publishing something because it could be seen. Mm-hmm. You know, like like, you know, and a lot of the times with creative work, like, it's hard to go back to it and be like, oh, well, if I change character names and settings and all this stuff, maybe it'll be different enough. And I know, like, a lot of people just, like, this is my vision. And so, you know, when there's the uneasiness of, you know, what is copyrighted, what isn't, and, you know, especially for a lot of people that don't have a lot of money, you're trying to get your first book or first story out, so you don't want to be sued, you know, the first time you do it. So I think, you know, in one way, yes, it could be argued that it encourages uniqueness. But it also, you know, can discourage, like, similarity, you know? Mm-hmm. And this is where it just, because then what happens is you get these movie studios that just adapt or reboot something that already exists. And because they have a lot of money, they can buy the rights to something or they can license it out, right? And so you get these, like, you know, big ticket movies that can reboot franchises because they feel comfortable with it because they have the capital to kind of, you know, reuse the stories. Mm-hmm. And so then it's like, well, yeah, if other people are scared and then you have big corporations that are just retelling the same stories, like, how creative of a situation can we get ourselves into, right?
Yeah, it's that dynamic between, is it actually promoting creativity or is it actually limiting it more? Because you'd think that when copyright came about, you'd think during that time it was something that you'd want to protect because that story was probably new. And it was, you don't want everyone just to use all of your works. But now that we're at this kind of point of, I don't want to say reusing all these same ideas, but I think there's only a certain amount of scenarios that we can tell a story and certain spins and twists that we've probably already heard before. And so mm-hmm. I think, I don't want to say it's a saturation of works or a saturation of certain story types. But I think that's where just copyright starts gaining too much power because they have more opportunities to strike down other works to create a monopoly. And just kind of, mm-hmm. yeah, it's like what you said with big corporations, they have the money to strike anyone down. And with the smaller artists trying to get their start, they can't go up against these large corporations and large authors that are already established.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, one thing you said earlier about, you know, thinking about copyright and the talked about saturation of works, you know, the last time we had a really large conversation around the world about property rights, intellectual property rights, was in the beginning of the 18th century when the printing press started to explode. And they were trying to, you know, the at least at the time, the British government was trying to prevent people from making pirated copies and telling different stories than like what the author wanted to tell, and publishing houses doing whatever they wanted to and not being regulated. And so that was a huge technological shift, right? You could have more things out there. Like the saturation of works was much greater at that time. And I think like, you know, the internet, like all, we haven't really had that conversation yet. You know, we had, at the early days of the internet, we had the old Napster problem, but that didn't quite solve intellectual property in the age of the internet, because it was just about distributing music, you know. And oftentimes I'm wondering, you know, as it gets easier to edit video or make songs, right? How are we going to react to that? You know, when I can remix stuff easier, when I can manipulate photos and images much easier, like how are we going to deal with that? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think you're right. Every time there's like a saturation of works, and it's usually because of some technological shift, we need to kind of address that, right? You know, it's something like in this whole COVID thing, we all use the internet. You know, everyone needs the internet. So why is the internet not like a public service, like your electricity or your sewage or your water, right? Like everyone needs it now, especially if we're learning and teaching from afar. You know, we need to revisit that. And I think it's the same with like intellectual property in the internet. When you have images and stuff that can just float so easy and be created so easy, like what do you do? You know, like what is legitimate? What's illegitimate? What's derivative? What's not derivative? Mm-hmm. We just haven't made those. We haven't decided that, you know, and I just feel like we haven't really decided what the internet is and its relation to our lives.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting time when that comes, especially like what you said with photography and editing photos. If I wanted to take a picture from online that was someone else's work, but I edited it enough, is that a derivative or is that still my own work, even though it's not my base photo?
Yep.
And I think...
Yeah, like where...
Oh, you can go.
No, please.
And then I think something else is like with music. It's kind of same thing with, you know, works like fan fiction, is that I feel like there's always, you kind of hear the certain notes, the same kind of rhythms going on within music. Everything is getting reused. And so, and then sometimes you see cases saying that they directly copied this person's work. It's just like what you said with copyright. And even if people die, that's still protected for like, I think like 76 years after or something like that.
Yep.
And so it just becomes, you know, like that recurring word, saturation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it gets to this point about what's the threshold between something where it exists and where it's something is new. You know, there's a philosophical argument called the Ship of Theseus, where it's like, you know, you over the course of this ship's lifetime, you basically repair everything on that ship and you have all the old wood in this landfill. And I go to the landfill and I remake the ship out of all of the old wood. Mm-hmm. What is the ship then? Is it this new one? Or is it all the discarded ones? And if there's a shift that happens, how much of the discarded one and the new one, like in each separate ship, does there need to exist for something to be new or something to be old? So, you know, like, and these were philosophical arguments that no one's really decided.
I think it's just such a, like a hard one, because you don't want, like, I think people don't want to give just a hard yes, and then it gets abused. But it's almost like, because we're in this blurred situation, it's kind of still getting abused. I think there's like no way to win almost.
Yeah. I mean, it's always tough when you have to say it depends.
Mm-hmm. It's situation, you know, like, and then it's just like, oh, okay. Well, if I produce this works, I hope someone somehow, somewhere in the world, doesn't try to relate this back to their work that they had that was unheard of.
Yeah.
Because I think with some, I can't remember exactly, but I know some music artists or something, some people recognize that a song or something may be similar to their old unknown song. And so they wait for years hoping that, you know, that copied work might blow up. And then they try to claim copyright to get that money.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's, that's interesting. Yeah, just to wait, to make it, to wait, you know, and there should be like a threshold to be like, you know, if you've produced something and you haven't made any claims after this many years, like, you shouldn't be allowed to make the claim again. You know, we have a statute of limitations on a lot of things. Why can't we have it on copyright? Mm-hmm.
You know, clearly, it's for it's clearly for the reasons of you wanting to take everything that they made off of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's very apparent. Okay. Well, we've had a great conversation. Thank you, Alan, for talking about copyright with me. Before we go, do you have any final thoughts you want to give about copyright?
Think that's it. I think it's just a really muddied conversation. Like what you said, it's very philosophical about the wood that was put into the in waste, and then someone builds a new ship. Whose is it at that point? I think it's just a very tough conversation to have, and it's always going to be changing. I think, I don't think we'll ever kind of get to a point where we can definitively say yes or no. I think it's always going to be situational every year, and it's just going to become worse as we have new works and copyright protects dead artists' works for like 76 years or more. And I think it's just going to be very complicated for new stories to come out when you have these corporations that have so much money and so much protection.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, Ready Player One is a great example of this. It's like you oversaturate with copyrighted images. So you put so much together that, you know, there's not a lot of one thing. Mm-hmm. And so it's really hard to make a copyright claim when there's so much material that's just remixed together. Like, that's what I think is the interesting part, is there... that text gives us an indication that there's a way that you could oversaturate it. And whether or not, you know, Ready Player One is good or not, we can make arguments about that. But I think that's it's an interesting shift, right? In this age of protected icons and brands, you know, that you can just take a ton of things together
and mash them all together and say, here's a new story.
Yep. And then, you know, and then we're trying, you know, these little things where I'm only reusing a character or something, like, it seems pretty ridiculous in that scale that we would go after someone for reusing, you know, let's say the main character of Harry Potter or something, right? You just use one character. Like, why should someone be able to come after someone for doing that, where you can use every character in every contemporary or 80s film imaginable and mash it together, that to be okay? You know, I think that's the I think the issue is it's more on that lower saturation side that we're uncomfortable with. And it needs to be, you know, like, we need to be a little more comfortable with just reusing one or two things, because it's inevitable, you know, especially because we can make so much more stuff now.
Yeah, and we have more people on Earth, and they're all, you know, they're all creative in their own ways, and so there's something's bound to happen.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you, Alan. It's been wonderful. Stay tuned for tomorrow. We should have another episode. Thank you.